Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Three Americans are among the 37 people sentenced to death in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the military court, convicting them for their role in the coup in May. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller says they have 5 days to appeal that decision, and embassy staff is doing what they can to support the Americans.
We understand that the legal process in the DRC allows for defendants to appeal the court's decision. Embassy staff have been attending these proceedings as they've gone through the process so far. We'll continue to attend the proceedings and follow the developments closely.
A Brit, Belgian, and Canadian, also part of the group, sentenced to death. With polls tightening, candidates are campaigning in key swing states. Kamala Harris in Pennsylvania today, former President Trump in California and Nevada. Tens of thousands of Boeing union machinists voting to strike after rejecting a 25% pay raise over 4 years. The union says its members want a 40% raise and other incentives. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anywhere at the WGBW website, wgbw.fm.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin Elections Commission wants state lawmakers to create a new office on election transparency. Administrator Megan Wolf says public demand for transparency is growing. If approved, the office would operate inside the WEC and handle audits and voter accessibility. School districts around Wisconsin will hold nearly three times as many referenda this year compared to last year. There'll be 120 of them on November 5th. Governor Evers says the trend bothers him.
What I'm concerned about, frankly, is when I hear when school districts have to go to referendum just for basics. That's an indication to me that the state isn't doing enough.
State funding has remained relatively stable in recent years, but inflation is forcing school districts to ask voters for more. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. A former worker at Waupun Correctional Institution pleaded guilty Thursday to smuggling contraband into the prison in exchange for bribes. A news release said 47-year-old William Lee Holman of Fox Lake received about 125 bribes, totaling over $53,000 from inmates or their associates. Holman is scheduled to be sentenced on December 12th. He faces up to 5 years in prison. Wisconsin's archery and crossbow deer hunting season officially gets underway tomorrow. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources reminds hunters to take proper safety precautions, like wearing a safety harness in a tree stand and informing someone where you're going and when you expect to come back. The DNR also has new hunting resources available on their website and their mobile app. And that's what you need to know. I'm Lisa Hale, WGBW News.
History is made for the Brewers' youngest player. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska with sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. Jackson Churio became the first 20-year-old to hit 20 home runs and steal 20 bases in a season during Milwaukee's 3-0 win over San Francisco Thursday night. Milwaukee leads the NL Central by 9 games with 16 games to play. The Brewers are in Arizona this weekend for a 3-game series beginning tonight. The Green Bay Packers take on Indianapolis this Sunday, and they'll be starting Malik Willis at quarterback with Jordan Love out of action with an MCL sprain. Head coach Matt LaFleur said that even with Love out, he expects the team to come together to win against Indianapolis on Sunday.
Everybody has their own focus, and it's to do their job at the best of their ability and whatever they're asked to do. And I think they've embraced that challenge. I think they'll embrace their roles, and I think they'll stick together and rally around each other.
Both the Packers and Colts are looking for their first win. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Clouds thicken for tonight, maybe a stray storm late, lows upper 50s. And a mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow with pop-up showers and storms, high, low 80s. Mostly sunny and a high in the mid-80s Sunday. Lots of 80s ahead looking into next week. Next rain chance, midweek. Right now it's 78 degrees.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
Get ready to go for the green or gold with Civic Media's new Text to Win contest. When you go for the green or gold, you could win $100 cash, gold jewelry, and be entered to win our grand prize, two indoor club-level seats to see the green and gold in Green Bay. Download the free Civic Media app and get ready to text in for your first chance to win in this statewide contest starting Monday, September 16th. Get ready to go for the greener gold with your local Civic Media radio station. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, Civic Media sports director Jimmy Cuska drops by to give us a preview of this weekend's Packer game. And it's a bar band Friday night as Max Inc.'s Terry Barr joins the show with new music.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Happy Friday to us all. Friday the 13th. Ooh, I'm so scared. Thank you for joining us. The phone line is open, as always, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Got Jess on the board working hard for you, for us. Thank you, Jess. Got some sound for you fine folks today. And super happy to announce James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, the Law Review, playing out on Civic Media here at 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturdays. Jim, it's been too long, man. I'm so
it
super.
It has been.
I'm
it
jazzed as been. Hell to see you,
and
man.
And delighted to be with you in this inaugural week of your new show. Congratulations. Very excited for you, for us, for the entire state of Wisconsin, the entire United States of America.
Man.
How about that?
Man, right? Thank you, Jim.
Big time.
Right? Yeah, and thanks for coming in the Friday before your Saturday show.
Absolutely.
So we can use all your best material here.
Absolutely. As we always say, everything happens on Friday night between 8 and 10 anyway. Right. So I haven't planned anything for tomorrow morning at this point. So we're all set to go this afternoon.
Whatever you're planned for ends up being something different anyway,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Cutting room floor. Cutting room floor.
I know we have lots to catch up on with all the different legal cases against the former president. But I also, you know, we haven't talked in a while, Jim, want to get your sense, the debate this week.
Yes.
All the polls say Donald Trump won. If you listen to Donald Trump, I watched it as lots of people did. I don't think Donald Trump won. I think some of the polls are going away from Donald Trump. I thought it was great, Jim. What was your sense? And were there any big issues you think Harris really took it to Trump?
Sure. I think she hit everything, both in terms of substance and process, both. She obviously had the opportunity and used the opportunity to talk about her basic policies in a number of different areas, including things like immigration, yes, and the economy, things that sort of hit people in the pocketbook. I think the other piece of this is that when America goes to the polls in November, as we do every 4 years, we want to put somebody in the White House that we can trust. Now, I don't think we did that in 2016, but for the most part, we want to have somebody there that we like. And even if you're not politically excited about all the presidents of our recent lifetime, the reality is they're all kind of nice guys along the way, with the exception of one. And I think Kamala Harris, early this week, convinced America that she can be trusted, that she is somebody who knows what she's talking about, that will surround herself with people who also are informed and have got it together, and that they should not be worried about America. We'll still have challenges, absolutely, but she's got plans, she's got thoughts, and she provided, I thought, both the stability in terms of temperament and also the humor. I have to say, I think if you didn't watch it on television and you missed, therefore, her her caressing her chin from time to time.
When the body language.
The body language. Yeah. Looking at Donald when he's talking, yes, again, about dogs and cats in Springfield, Ohio. All these other crazy things. Smiling and making fun of that in a way that you and I would do, Dom.
Talk
right?
about extreme.
Right? Right? Exactly. Yeah. Right? And I think that's it, too. She's the kind of person I think that you would want to go out to breakfast, lunch, right. dinner with.
Yeah.
And again, I think that Americans tend to vote for people, for the most part, who they feel comfortable with in that position of great responsibility.
I thought the contrast of her you know, positive vision for this country, you know, looking into the camera, saying, you never asked a victim or a witness, you know, are you a Democrat or Republican? I asked you if you're okay.
Right, right.
And talking about, you know, the work that needs to get done and the hopeful and the joy. And then you hear Donald Trump's closing statements and, you know, we're all going to die,
right.
Jim.
It's apocalyptic, right? Once
it's
again.
It's going to be World War III and we're a right. failing nation and everything right. sucks and I'm the only one that can fix it. I mean, just on that alone, I thought it was a great contrast.
Right. Absolutely. He's once again painting this dystopia. And again, if you want a dystopian future, well, right. you've got an option.
Yes,
there, right?
There is. Right? There's an option for
Absolutely.
You.
Recall when, again, his inaugural address, which is all about that, delivered to, well, a few hundred people in the mall that day. But beyond that, again, this is a man who has a very different view, not only about the future of America, but his role in it, which is principally his focus. And again, as you just indicated, Dom, not calling upon Americans to be a part of that. The other part of this, I think, which is my own bias, I think it's the bias of many people, and that is she is not only a lawyer, but she's also a prosecutor. And that's where I come from, too. She is able to identify, not only in that setting, but in others as well, what works, what doesn't. And she's able to put together, I think, in a way that makes sense for people what is, in fact, meritorious and what isn't, and describe for people the reasons why these things are to be believed and these things are not. She's giving closing statements, I think, in many of these presentations, and I thought that's what she was doing earlier this week as well.
And the baiting him,
right?
What the crowd said as soon as right. that came right. out, I'm going to do right. something strange. I'm going to encourage you to go to one of Donald Trump rallies. Right. People are walking right. out; they're bored. Right. Oh, he just couldn't take it, and he was just waiting and waiting and right. waiting, and then so he walked right into it, and she was prepared. Coming out and shaking his hand right
yes,
off the bat.
Absolutely.
I mean, kind of set the right. stage a little bit, didn't it?
Absolutely. That tone, we recall again the last time we had a woman and a male again and a man on the debate stage. And you had that strange situation where Hillary was walking around and Donald Trump was walking around. A weird situation here. She comes out. She's definitive. She is clear. And it is her hand that goes out and establishes from the get-go that she is in control of this, and she is at least, if not more, she's actually more than that, on the same plane that he is, and she is also gracious. That sends a note of diplomacy, right?
Certainly.
To those people who might think, well, she's off, she's out there. No, this is somebody who said, you know what? I disagree with everything that you say. I don't believe you've got the merits to be the president of the United States of America, but still, I'm going to respect you. I will shake your hand because that's what civilized people do in America. That also send a clear message about who she will be when she's in the White House.
I might have, you know, Trump shook my hand one time. I don't know if I was on the debate stage. She's a better person than I, perhaps. The Dom Salvia Show, James Santel, 855-752-4842. Kamala Harris for the people. Donald Trump for Donald Trump. I mean, I think Donald Trump is running to stay out of prison.
Right.
I mean, if Donald Trump loses this election, he gets sentenced at the end of November. These other trials will continue to go forward. So this isn't really about service to the American people and upholding the Constitution. This is about keeping Donald Trump's ass out of jail.
Absolutely. And he has said clearly that at least with respect to two of those, there's a theory that keeps all of them out from under him. But at least two of those, he will look to the Department of Justice and say, you know what, Mr. Attorney General, acting Attorney General, nominated, confirmed Attorney General, whoever that may be, my goodness, in a Trump administration, second time around, he will look over and say, you need to dismiss these cases. He has promised to do that, and he will do it. Is it appropriate to do it? Absolutely not. There should, as you and I, Dom, have discussed in many other settings, there should be this arm's length separation between the White House and prosecution decisions. Donald Trump will run roughshod over that. And the two cases, again, which we'll talk about this afternoon, I am sure, coming out of Florida and also coming out of D.C., those will go away. Those will go away on January 22nd, maybe the 21st of 2025. And then you can make an argument, believe it or not, that even those other cases for a sitting president to prosecute going forward, there's a non-frivolous argument that even that, you cannot do that while the president is in the White House. Much more complicated, but it does. Absolutely changes. Who we elect in November is going to change not only the geography of America, but for Donald Trump himself, his future as a, now he is a convicted criminal already. He's a felon. We know that already. But his capacity to continue to be at liberty, if you will, and the possibility that people like Judge Mershon, even Tanya Chutkan at some point down the road, may in fact say there's a time that you've got to be spending in detention. It may be federal detention. It may be New York detention. That day could come, and sooner rather than later.
Merrick Garland, the attorney general, spoke to an association of attorneys general, yes, I believe yes, that was the case right. yesterday. Do we have any sound of that, Jess, from yesterday? No big. If you have some, give me the thumbs up. If not, no big deal. Jim, he wasn't talking about Donald Trump by name, but he was certainly talking about Donald Trump.
Absolutely. And the consequences of what Donald Trump is saying out there and basically wagging his finger at Donald Trump and the people who follow him and say, you know what? We're doing a job on behalf of the people of America. You may not like this administration, but the reality is attorneys general, with the exception of some recently, perhaps, should be independent. And how dare you, America, look at the civil servants. I was one of them for 25 years. The civil servants who are not political, who are not partisan, who are coming to work every day doing civil litigation, criminal litigation, investigations, 10,000 people in the Department of Justice who show up, they know what they're doing, and they're not animated by hatred and by partisan
deep state lackeys.
Exactly, that sort of thing. How dare you, he says, threaten us. And when you do that, you not only undermine, frankly, the basic structure of America, but you're also compromising over time the legitimacy, the credibility, the very people you're attacking. If I'm going to work every day and I am now concerned about being threatened and being frankly, even physically attacked, that will impact the nature of the people that you've got working in the Department of Justice. That's the real terror of what Donald Trump is doing. And we see that all the time. We see that today, even as you know, schools are shutting down in Springfield, Ohio, because of bomb scares. This is just absolutely craziness, and it is scary and it's dangerous. And that's what Merrick Garland was telling us yesterday.
And it's given oxygen, and it's being allowed and given permission to by Donald Trump and the words and his actions and his words. Jim, has there ever been as a prosecutor? Has there ever been a someone who's prosecuted who didn't feel like they're being persecuted?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. And the reality is that comes along with the package. That is, you know, there's no defendant who I prosecuted in the wake of a grand jury indictment who said, hey, that Jim Santel, he's a terrific guy. right. And again, that's a part of our process, right? We come in, we have a system, and we come out of that system based upon the notion that's in the adversarial process where the government is put to its test. And the defense comes forward and tests that prosecution and puts me to the test, puts prosecutors to the test. That's what our system is all about. You don't have to like me. I don't have to like anybody in the courtroom, but we've got a system here that has integrity to it. And that's also when Donald Trump attacks judges and jurors and staff people, that also goes beyond just what we'd otherwise expect of defendants and defense counsel and prosecutors and everybody else involved. And he's attacking the system and telling America that the very system we've had for 238 years is incredible. Don't believe it.
Folks, you're listening to The Dominic Salvia Show. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus The Law Review. He's going to stick around with me today. You can join on the lines as well, 855-752-4842. Going to come back with a little bit of that Merrick Garland sound. Sounds like he was dressing down Trump. We'll be right back.
You talk about extreme.
Donald Trump was fired by 81 million people.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matinee on Air.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Hey, welcome back to the Dominic Salvia Show. Happy Friday to us all. You can join us on the lines, 855-752-4842. Jess will screen you. I got James Santel in studio with me. Callers, be patient. We will get to you. But we're talking about Attorney General Merrick Garland yesterday, talking to the Association of Attorneys General.
Yes.
That was you at one point, right, Jim?
Right. Well, we've talked to U.S. attorneys from time sometimes, too. But this is, again, he's talking to even more significant
U.S. Attorney.
All of those folks. Important, again, that's a significant point. He's talking to state attorneys general, right? They're crossing government systems, if you will,
Yes. Federal
to state, and saying, you know what, these principles I'm describing, they apply to all of us, right? The federal system, the state system, the local system. And, again, not everybody in that room probably embraced everything that Merrick Garland had to say. But there's a basic respect for the office, and there's a basic
regardless of your political leanings, if you're in the law and order business,
absolutely,
you probably generally think that, criminals should be prosecuted.
Exactly. And that our role is to keep people safe and secure, and that's how we do it, right? And our role, as he implicitly said again yesterday, is not to throw people in jail, it's to accomplish justice. And sometimes that means that people do go to jail and go to prison for all kinds of deterrent purposes. But the larger focus, as he was talking about, was to make certain, number one, that we are committed to service constituents out there. That's 340 million people in America right now. And then also ensuring that you've got the safety and security for the employees in the Attorney General offices, and then also in U.S. Attorney's offices and other places around the nation.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney, not attorney general. Let's play some of the sound of Merrick Garland, if you would, please, Jess.
For sure. This is about the norms of the justice system.
Go.
Our norms are a promise that we will not allow this department to be used as a political weapon. Our norms are a promise that we will not allow this nation to become a country where law enforcement is treated as an apparatus of politics. Our norms are a promise that we will fiercely protect the independence of this department from political interference in our criminal investigations. The public servants of the Department of Justice do not bend to politics, and that they will not break under pressure.
I mean, yes, absolutely. Thank you for that. I wonder if Bill Barr
agreed
with that, Jim.
Exactly. And if he would have delivered the same kind of speech, right? If it would have been about the importance of doing things maybe for a president who plainly, Bill Barr did the bidding of Donald Trump in a number of very specific cases. We talked about those in the past. And again, that affirmation of the Department of Justice is, yes, it's a part of an administration, but it is not coming out of the White House. And you're not getting directed.
It's not a White House attorney, man. Right? It's not your personal attorney. It's not your consigliere.
Right,
it's,
right.
It's,
And we look back in history. We've got all those instances, most notably, I worked for Janet Reno in the past, and most notably, she and Bill Clinton did not get along. She was one of the longest tenured attorneys general in our history, and they did not get along. She, among other things, again, sanctioned the Whitewater investigation, led ultimately to his impeachment. But that's the point, right? And you do not want to. You can certainly have a relationship of the sort that Barack Obama had with my boss, Eric Holder. But you also want to make certain that the decisions that you're making there on 10th and Constitution are not being directed. How many times in this administration has the Biden administration also said, we did not know about this decision?
Right, right.
That's the way it should be.
Supposed to be that
way. Absolutely.
855-752-4842. A public servant in her own right, Maggie Dawn, host of the Maggie Dawn Show. Hey, Maggie, welcome. What do you got?
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for covering this. I did not know about Merrick Garland's address. I think what he's saying is really important. And it came to mind that I have never really explained this on the air. I am a Democrat. I've always been a Democrat, but I obviously served as a public lawyer, and I was the chief legal officer for Milwaukee County. So people may be thinking, well, how does that work exactly? And the way it works is I checked my own personal politics at the courthouse door when I showed up to work every day. And I gave objective advice to every single one of my clients, and I advocated for the interests of the residents and citizens and voters of Milwaukee County without fear or prejudice, right? Without bias or preference. That is what civil servants do. By my accounting and my nearly 15 plus years in public service, that's what people are doing. They have their personal preferences, but those are personal and those are for your off hours. When you show up at work, you do the job. That's the dominating characteristic of public servants, especially lawyers in government. The second thing I wanted to say is the intimidation factor is real. When I was advising the Milwaukee County Elections Commission during the 2020 recount in the depths of COVID, my office and myself specifically by name received death threats. I have people that have shown up at my home. That was a very real thing. I got a postcard every month from a guy who never signed his name but threatened me with all sorts of harm.
Wow.
So these things are real, and I think it's important for people to know that. You guys know me pretty well. I don't intimidate, but I don't know that that's the case for every single person, right? I had to work hard to ensure that my staff knew that if you feel unsafe or someone threatens you, you let me know because I'm the one that takes that heat, not you.
Right.
Right. It is ridiculous to ask public servants to be under threat while they are simply trying to do their job.
Right.
Thanks, guys.
Maggie could not have said it better. That notion, these are civil servants who are paid to do what is right. And as to your first point, once again, I think, Maggie, you would confirm this as well in your former role as corp counsel. And I was U.S. attorney. When I was an assistant U.S. attorney for 25 years, I can tell you, I will say this under oath, that there was not a single time when we talked about to supervisors, to managers, talked about prosecuting a civil case, a criminal case. And Maggie, I suspect you'd affirm this as well. Never, ever was there any even close invocation of anybody saying, well, gee, what does the Democratic platform say about this? What would be the Republican principles that would guide this? Not a single time was that ever a part of the discussion. It was about the merits, about the law. Did we fight about whether or not particular charges should be presented to a grand jury? Sure, we did. That's a part of the process. Not a single time did anybody in the 30 years of my involvement in the Department of Justice, even several years at the U.S. Department of the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C., never, ever discussion about politics inside important decisions on behalf of the people of
America. So you never, like, put your finger on the board and say, get that guy, he's the Republican, I don't like
absolutely
him.
Absolutely
not. That'd be bad, right?
Absolutely. And you'd be reported, frankly. You'd be the subject of investigations by some internal people who look at
as
you and say,
should be,
there
right?
should be,
That's
absolutely.
How it's supposed to be. We don't want political... prosecutions. And just because a politician is getting prosecuted for the crimes that he may have committed, at least a grand jury has decided
probable
to,
cause.
Probable cause, and you go to trial and you take your chances. Or you cut a deal. Or you just do a little less criming. Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. James Santel in the studio, just on the board, 855-752-4842.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Democratic vice presidential nominee Tim Walz comes to Wisconsin today. He starts his weekend this afternoon in Wausau, then goes to Superior tomorrow. This will be Walz's second visit to Wisconsin in 2 weeks. He was in Milwaukee on Labor Day. Carrying your Social Security card with you makes you vulnerable to identity thieves. The SSA's Abigail Zapote says it's really not necessary, especially if you have your number memorized.
We do ask that folks, first and foremost, not carry their Social Security card around with them, whether it's in their purse or their wallet. Usually that's an easy way to be able to lose their Social Security card.
There's more information about keeping your identity safe at ssa.gov. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. Officials with the Wisconsin Department of Health Services want to hear from you about how they can improve care for families. Every 5 years, they put out the Maternal and Child Health Survey. It covers things like prenatal care, postpartum mental health, birth outcomes, and access to resources. Dr. Jasmine Zapata with the DHS.
It's very important that we have diversity of voices, of backgrounds, of experiences. And so if you could just help us to spread the word, if anybody's listening to this and can help us spread the word to a friend or a family member or at work about this needs assessment, it would be very, very helpful.
Zapata says the DHS wants to hear more from people in rural areas and from more African Americans as well. We have a link to the survey at WGBW.FM. And that's what you need to know. I'm Lisa Hale, WGBW News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabo. At Nightlight, we talk about movies and TV and everything involving the arts. Sometimes we get a great suggestion from one of our guests of what we should be watching, and the other night was just such an occasion. Guest and author comedian Roger Rittenhouse recommended the action drama film Rebel Ridge, starring Aaron Pierre and Don Johnson. Pierre is currently working on the Lion King prequel as the voice for Mufasa. Turns out he's pretty good at the live-action stuff, too. He plays a soft-spoken, mysterious victim, or so we think, as he is pitted against a crooked small-town sheriff played by Don Johnson. Also in the film is David Denman. You might know him from the sitcom The Office as Roy, Pam's fiancé. Denman is carving out a nice career for himself, choosing different roles and at times playing offbeat bad guys. The movie is like a smarter version of Rambo. It's available to stream on Netflix, and it's getting a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Clouds thicken for tonight, maybe a stray storm late, lows upper 50s. And a mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow with pop-up showers and storms, high, low 80s. Mostly sunny and a high in the mid-80s Sunday. Lots of 80s ahead looking into next week. Next rain chance, midweek. Right now it's 80.
Hi, this is Jim Schmidt, your former mayor of Green Bay. You know, I've always cared about local issues. I still do. Join me on my new show, Lean Local, here on WGBW. I'll interview community leaders and elected officials, discuss the economy and development projects, and we'll talk about the future of education here in Greater Green Bay. As they say, all politics is local. So join me for Lean Local, Sunday at 1 p.m. on the Talk of Green Bay, 97.9 WGBW.
The Todd Alba Show.
Going back to this interview we just had, again, many thanks to Michael Cohen, former attorney and fixer for Donald Trump. Let's go back to the phone lines. Don in Milwaukee. Don, thanks for holding. What say you?
My God, I've been listening to your station, Civic Media, for a long time, and this was a blockbuster. I was absolutely riveted.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. We'll review the sports news of the week as well as Governor Tim Walz in Superior. Let you know what happened. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Phone lines are open. Going to hit them next, 855-752-4842. Merrick Garland speaking yesterday to the Association of Attorneys General, not the U.S. Attorneys Association, had to remind, or not, probably not the folks he was talking to, because he was really talking to the MAGAs and to Trump,
right,
about
right.
how it's supposed to be.
Absolutely.
That you're not supposed to use this department as your personal consigliere to go after your political opponents, to look at prosecutions through the lens of politics. And certainly, you know, the choice of to prosecute something or to not. Mm-hmm. My understanding, there's been some story about some money from Egypt that
right.
built, that went made $10 million made it to Trump's campaign,
right.
and Barr poo-pooed that
right.
thing. And now they're talking about maybe doing some investigation, at least in Congress,
right.
to see
right.
what went down. Is right. that valid, do you think, Jim? What's your right. understanding of that
absolutely.
Story?
Absolutely. That particular story, again, as it broke again, I think on a Friday night, thus we could talk about it on Saturday morning, right, Dom? When that story broke, I'm thinking, my gosh,
yeah.
If this had broken and we'd gotten information about it, and maybe the Department of Justice had it at the time, this would be not just a blockbuster, bombshell kind of stuff. This is the sort of thing that would completely derail a normal administration, right? And the fact, again, probably the statute of limitations has run on it, thus the congressional investigations as opposed to a federal investigation leading to some criminal prosecution. But that kind of thing, once again, underscores the notion you follow the facts wherever they may lead. We know, of course, during the Nixon administration that we had some people in Maine Justice, Elliot Richardson, right? This is a Saturday Night Massacre, decides, no, I'm not going to fire the special prosecutor, Mr. President. You can fire me and I will resign. And yes, he resigns, his deputy resigns, and ultimately, yes, it is Robert Bork who does Richard Nixon's bidding. That kind of integrity inside a Republican administration is the sort of thing that you would anticipate in every single administration. That the president tells you to do something that you know is illegal, you've got two choices. You can do it and suffer the consequences, which should be criminal prosecution, or you can say, I'm gone, and you can depart the field.
Can you just, like, quiet quit? You know, right, just not take the call right, for a
right,
couple of weeks.
Exactly. Oh, I think there are some attorneys general who have said, you know what, I've got to go speak to the law school at Howard University tonight,
right,
and
yeah.
I'll talk to the president later on.
Uh-huh.
A few times when just delaying that conversation, letting time pass, are not a bad thing. But once again, it underscores this importance of this arm's length relationship you've got to have between the White House and the Department of Justice. Not that the Department of Justice, but here's what you can do. I'm sure listeners are saying, well, gee, part of the administration can certainly say, you know what, Mr. Attorney General, or Madam Attorney General, I want you to focus on environmental cases. I want you to focus on antitrust cases. I want you to focus on civil rights things. And those will all continue. Give some priority to those. What the White House cannot do is say, I want you to prosecute Jim Santel for doing this particular thing, that specific directive, or I want you to dispose of this case,
right.
deep six this case, yep. because, again, my political allies are on the line here. That specific direction, that's what's problematic.
But we assume that's what happened. with Bill Barr.
Absolutely.
Right. Right. At least in one case, maybe more. Michael so if it Quinn, happened once right, with a Republican, could I mean, it probably wasn't the only time ever, Jim. Right. So it doesn't take many. It only takes a few in the right spot that can, you know, direct the whole thing. Do you think the Bill Barr Justice Department, that they would do the same thing as the Nixon Justice Department? I mean, certainly some of those guys were down for the program.
Right.
Jeffrey Clark.
Right.
He was all
Clark.
About it. I mean, he's ready to sell us all out. You know, there are some folks that were down and some folks that weren't.
Right.
How would you compare the ethics of the Barr Justice Department to that of Bork?
Right. You know, so I think that what you had certainly at the end there, when you had an acting attorney general who did stand up again, we heard all about this, right? That both the acting attorney general, the deputy went over to the White House, and there was this sort of very confrontational discussion.
Yeah.
The attorney general said, Mr. President, if you do this, if you basically install this associate attorney general named Jeffrey Clark, who's advocating this notion that the 2020 election was stolen, reach out to the states, tell them the same thing, reach out to Congress, tell them to do things to undermine what the American voters have done. If you do that, you're going to get mass resignations. And Donald Trump, again, at that time, late in his administration, said, okay, I'm not going to do that. He backed off. You had that integrity there in the last moments. You'd like to think there, and there certainly were a lot of other people there. Yeah. But again, the Jeffrey Clark example is one where this is a man who's sort of third down in line, third or fourth in line, and he was ready to go. And he was doing the bidding. He put together documents that we ultimately found out about, basically articulating these crazy, unsupported, legally unsupported, factually unsupported notions. And he was ready to become the attorney general.
I mean, literally the behavior that Merrick Garland was preaching against
yesterday. Yep, absolutely. And it almost happened. Again, you wonder in a second Trump administration, who is, again, he's now out there saying, gee, now I've learned sort of from the first Trump administration. Yeah. Now I know what my powers are. And maybe initially I was guided by all these people, the institutional folks who came in and told me what I can and cannot do.
The first round.
The first round. Right, right. Then, they, right. Yeah. And he basically got rid of them over time. Now he comes in. If he comes in on January 20th, now he's ready to go and will put people in those positions. As I say, many of them are appointed. It is the attorney general. It's the deputy attorney general. Right now, there's a wonderful person named Lisa Monaco, also a friend and colleague of mine, at the risk of sounding like I'm just dropping names here. She is a terrific person who does a lot of the operational work of the department. The assistant attorneys general, the associate attorney general, all those people. And, of course, 93 U.S. attorneys around the country, all of them political appointees, but none of them a product of a partisan process where you're asked, you know, what is your allegiance, again, to the Republican Party, the Democratic Party? That, too, in my process, never once asked. Never once. Hmm. And, again, obviously interviewed by United States senators, and that's how the system works. But the focus is always on what are you going to bring to this job? And are you going to be a U.S. attorney, a prosecutor for all the people? Are you going to bring to this project, this program that you're going to be assigned to do, a notion of justice and of due process and substantive rights, all of that can be found out in an interview without talking about what the political process would otherwise dictate.
And the political thoughts of any candidate should be moot in any sort of interview like that.
Absolutely.
If you get to that level, whether or not you're a Democrat or Republican or independent or whatever your career, not voting at all, it has nothing to do with whether or not you can perform the job as you're supposed to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, you do have to have those basic skills. It helps, frankly, again, many of my colleagues in the administration that I was proud to be a part of, the Obama administration, the Holder administration, many of us, many of them who are now on television on a regular basis, right. The Joyce Vances and Barbara McQuaid's out there, they were my colleagues, and they had been in the U.S. Attorney's Office for many years. Again, civil servants like me, like many others, you get a benefit. You also get a benefit from these people who have gone to work for 10, 15, 20 years.
Well, that's a lot of institutional knowledge.
Absolutely,
there, man.
Absolutely, I mean, yeah. Right? And they've got pride in the institution. They know how it works, and they know if they see political animation inside a department, when they see it, they will respond in great horror. And again, I myself did not see it, but these are the people who would know it when they see it and stop
it. Well, Project 2025,
right?
Man.
Right?
You know, just SCAN everybody, new administration, bring my cronies in, and
right.
50,000 people here, you know, 100 attorneys general. We're fine. It's don't worry about it. Trump's got a plan.
Right, right. Absolutely. And that is a part of this. And it goes, again, to that fundamental notion that we've got a president who does have the authority to nominate people to all these positions. Now, they've got to be confirmed by the United States Senate. And again, there'll certainly be those who are opposition to those folks, but they will get confirmed. Again, they're not going to be, with the exception of federal judges, they're not going to be there forever. They're just there for term periods. But the power is there, and you can find not only 93 U.S. attorneys, you can find an awful lot of people who would take those political positions. Again, political, by that I mean you're appointed through the process, not that the job itself is political.
Right.
But those political appointees, you'll find those people who will say, yes, Mr. Trump, I will do this. I will propose to grand juries. And maybe that's the coming backstop when we think about what Donald Trump may want to do. But nonetheless, I'll present to grand juries evidence or proposed evidence of crimes that may or may not actually exist. You'll get enough people out there who might be willing to do that. That's stunning to say out loud, but that's the kind of people that he is hoping to recruit to these positions.
The best kind of people, Jim,
right, right.
The loyal people.
Right.
Be loyal. Call the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Amicus, a law review here on Civic Media Saturdays, 9 to 11. Let's get to some of our patient callers. Nathan, you're up. Welcome, Nathan. What do you got for us?
Well, I want to start by saying that Jim does a great impersonation of Adam Schiff in terms of his voice. The first time I heard you, I thought you were Adam Schiff. You guys sound pretty similar. But anyway,
I'm going to take that as a compliment,
I think, Nathan. I think it's a compliment.
All right. Very good. Thanks, Nathan.
Okay. You bet. I'm surprised you haven't heard that before, if you haven't. But is Merrick Garland a member of the Federalist Society? I heard that the other day on some interview, and I would just, if it's true, it explains a lot, because I was in the Kirsich Institute in the 90s when Bill Barr told Bush to pardon all those guys. And it was super unethical. And, you know, Bush Sr., Ali North, all those guys that were running the drugs out of MENA Air Base in Alabama or Arkansas, you know, all those guys got away with murder, basically. And Cheeto Messiah foments discontent on a daily basis, and he's now back to the big, you know, the big steel lie, where he, you know, last week he admitted that, well, we lost my whiskey. There are so many things he does on a daily basis that constitute fomenting discontent.
Well, like, Nathan, let me drill down to your point, if I may. If Merrick Garland was a member of the Federal Society, generally conservative, you know, group,
right.
That you think that would be the reason why there wasn't a prosecution sooner than later and a special counsel appointed sooner than later? Is that what you're kind of getting to?
Yeah.
Thanks, Nathan. I want to get Jim's comment on here. Thanks for the call, Nathan.
Interesting comment. Nathan, appreciate your contribution to the conversation. Remember that Merrick Garland was an appeals court judge, a circuit court judge. And, you know, they may have affiliations very generally, but again, ethics inside of federal judges say that they should not be affiliated formally with those kinds of partisan groups. And so I don't know if that is the case. I will defer to your view on that. Again, it falls in the category of what we talked about before, which is whatever your past affiliations have been, you need to check them at the door, as Maggie Dawn said just a few moments ago, and should not animate what you're doing. I would be somewhat surprised to find that Merrick Garland has a history of long association. Not to say that you can't speak to some groups out there. I tend to stay away from those hyper political groups, but you can speak to law student groups at law schools, and you can go around the country and speak to sort of apolitical groups, that kind of thing where you can convey your message well. You want to avoid, and that's actually one of the reasons why we're concerned these days about the Supreme Court making some of those visits, making some of those speeches to those kinds of groups.
Oh, man, right? There's so much to get to. Right.
How much time do we have today, Dom? Right?
We have another segment, then another hour, and Jim's going to stick around for the whole thing. We got Jess on the board and you on the lines, 855 855- 1-800-752-4842. I didn't know that Justice Alito was hanging out with royalty in Europe. And apparently the princess from Bavaria, I guess, Steve Bannon is a big fan.
The world is a strange place, is it not, Dom?
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. It's Friday. It's the Dom Salvia Show. It's you on the lines, 855-752-4842. Come back with us.
Nowadays, these partisan feelings are so strong that people have lost any sense of justice.
It's a bit snitty.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Nightlight with Peach Schwabba.
What's better than one win? Three wins? With Straight Savings, you keep your own phone, get one line for only $25 a month with real unlimited data, and get rewarded with a $200 phone credit after 12 months. It's a win-win-win. Head to Walmart or visit straighttalk.com today. Switch to Straight Talk. Less dollars, more sense. Straight Savings Plan enrollment requires compatible unlocked device and new line of service. Bonus device credit requires 12 months of active service. Offer ends if eligibility requirements are no longer met. Taxes and fees apply. For network management practices, see Straight Talk's terms and conditions.
Some big ideas being shared at the Cap Times Idea Fest in Madison. Civic Media is proud to be a part of it and will broadcast the live one-on-one discussion with Nancy Pelosi. Hear what the first female Speaker of the House thinks about the state of politics and the presidential election, Monday, September 16th at 7:30 p.m. Live coverage of Nancy Pelosi from Idea Fest, Monday night, September 16th at 7:30 on your local Civic Media radio station.
This is the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Welcome back to the show. Thank you for listening. 855-752-4842. To Nathan's point, I did a Google. My Google's not broke. Nathan found the Federalist Society site, and they do have a bio on Merrick Garland under the contributors section, and they have this disclaimer on the bottom of the bio. A person listed as a contributor has spoken or otherwise participated in Federalist Society events, publications, or multimedia presentations. A person's appearance on this list does not imply any other endorsement or relationship between the person and the Federalist Society. And it goes on from there.
Sure. And it could be, again, speculation here. You may have an appeals court judge, a district court judge, who out of just deference and probably would also then engage with maybe the American Constitution Society and the other side of the, maybe you write an article for a newsletter and talk about something apolitical. You talk about the role of the Department of Justice. You talk about the role of the FBI, and you make a contribution to a newsletter, that sort of thing. Maybe you have spoken at some point, but again, you're not endorsing. You're not saying I'm a part of this group. You're simply providing some civics education along the way.
If he was, of course, he was nominated by Obama.
Absolutely.
And the senator never gave him the hearing, right?
Right.
And if he were to be one of those Federalist Society, Trumper types, you think they would have had that hearing?
Absolutely.
I mean? Come on in, Merrick. Welcome to the party, pal.
Exactly, right. It is the sort of thing that would get you some entree. And again, my sense is that appeals court judges, district court judges, federal, state judges as well, do this. I think they're always very sensitive. Again, we talk about the ethics codes, right? That's where this comes in, Dom. Very sensitive to not showing up as something that's overtly political. And if you do, in fact, engage again in the some way with this. You want to have again a very clear understanding,
like Clarence Thomas. Is that an asterisk to this? General thought,
right?
Alita, I don't know, man. I mean, maybe how it used to be, or at least it was perceived to be. Maybe they kept it under wraps. But when you take $4 or $5 million in gratuity,
right?
You know. Right. Thomas, it seems like a bribe to me, but let's not digress. Let's get to the lines. 855-752-4842. Mark, you're up. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, it's amazing to me that Donald Trump still fails to recognize the fact that, one of the suggestions in, kind of how I perceive it in Federalist 75, Hamilton actually says more or less that the chief executive is actually a hostage to justice, which means he's a servant of the law.
Yeah.
He's supposed to follow, make sure that the law is actually faithfully executed as part of his oath of office. I mean, but part of the Article 2 is it says, that one of his duties is to make sure the law is faithfully executed. And for our Supreme Court to, well, not only the whole bribery thing, saying, if it comes after the fact, it's a gratuity, not a bribe. No, it's a bribe. It's an emolument which is prohibited under our Constitution. I mean, they're not supposed to be taking anything other than their actual salary while they're sitting in office. I mean, it applies to the president, and it should apply to judges as well, because it actually tears apart the whole perception of
impartiality. There you go. Right, Mark? Yep.
It certainly does, Mark. Thank you for the call. Isn't that the concern, though? I mean, when who's, Mark's got a point, certainly,
absolutely.
but who's going to enforce it?
Right. That's the point. When you've got an ethics code that can be enforced, as both Elena Kagan and now recently Ketanji Brown Jackson have said, they both said, the thing that we put out, which is really an amalgam of standards and principles out there, not a bad start, but it's got to be enforced by somebody. And that's the difference between the Supreme Court and all the other federal judges, where you can have a chief judge who walks down the hallway and says, you know what, we've got to talk. Let's have lunch about what we're doing here. A Supreme Court is not under those same kinds of strictures and guidelines. That's the enforceable piece of it. You now have two Supreme Court justices who say we need to enforce it. And interesting, Elena Kagan has said, why we do this? When she's talking to the Ninth Circuit a few weeks back, she says, let's have some lower federal judges. Some people have got a good reputation. I know that will be controversial, too. But lower federal judges, appellate court judges, district court judges who've been on the bench for a while, let's put together a panel. And when it comes to whether or not, for example, the Harlan Crow litigation should be decided in part by Clarence Thomas, have them decide it and make the determination. All these kinds of things, sources of income, as Mark just said.
And it's a great idea conceptually. But I have a hard time thinking that the conservatives on the U.S. Supreme Court would go in on that, specifically for the one reason. Any lower court judge who's already under an enforceable ethics code, to review someone that they're doing, the same thing that they would get in trouble for, it's going to be a no-brainer. Of course they're going to say that.
And exactly. And that's the reason why the very good proposal, Elena, probably will not get a lot of traction here. And the fact that it is a no-brainer, doesn't that make the point, right? That these are not difficult issues. We've got other justices, I think, but maybe it was Elena Kagan who said that, yes, she declared the fact that I think it was that Oprah sent her a floral arrangement at some point. And she disclosed that as a way to make clear that she is not on the take. One of the others, I think Ketanji Brown Jackson, talked about receiving a box of donuts from a group one morning. That kind of thing that we all smile at and we think, if we're reporting that, we are in pretty good shape because it means that the big things are not out there. We do have concerns about the big things with respect to at least two of them.
And callers, please hang over for the top of the hour. We're not going to get to you. I want to make sure we get all your comments and give you time to speak. The book deal kind of thing. I get it, but isn't it also kind of a, hey, here's a bunch of money for a book that maybe sell to a reader, maybe they won't. It's kind of, to me, a cutout of just giving people money.
It is. It's a concern. And frankly, to be fair, as I know this wonderful broadcast will always be, I've got Sonia Sotomayor out there who's hawking her own book, if you will. Danji Brown Jackson is apparently putting the final touches on her book as well. And it's not to say that they can't write books. You would hope that when the income from that comes in, they would give it to a charity of some kind, right? And that gives us all a little bit more reason to sleep well at night.
Yeah, I don't know, man. If Russia calls up and starts asking them to do a podcast or something, I think I'd be a little concerned.
Then we've got some problems.
Cash those checks. Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. James Santel graciously sticking around for another segment. I hope you do as well. You can join us on the lines at 855-752-4842. We still haven't gotten to, the Georgia case, right? Yes, it was Scott McAfee.
Right.
Dropping a couple of charges.
A couple more counts, right?
They're slimming it up, but maybe they're just making it a little easier to go.
Come back
with us. We'll dive into that and take more of your calls. Once again, 855-75-CIVIC. Return your love my way. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
On Monday's show, Gizmo joins us to talk about Evergreen Theater's production of House on Haunted Hill. And Kerry Josephson is in to talk about The Walk to End Alzheimer's. Join us.
Weekday mornings, 6 till 9.
From the lakeshore to Lake Winnebago.
Door to Fond du Lac counties.
Northeast Wisconsin is special for many different reasons. I'm Lisa Hale.
And I'm Terry Barr. Family and fun.
Safe communities and friends. We're featuring all of it as part of New Wisco Weekend, a news magazine show just for you, and highlighting what makes the Fox Valley and Green Bay area a great place to live.
Join us.
New Wisco Weekend, Saturday mornings at 8, Sundays at 11 on WGBW and WISS and the Civic Media app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.